Okay, today I'm at Sandhill Racing Stables near Minehead with Philip Hobbs. Thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us, Philip. Just talking about a bit about your background, you're from a racing family. Your father, Tony, was a permit holder?
Yes, my father was a farmer, but also had point-to-pointers. He used to ride in point-to-points himself. And then when my brother, who's 7 years younger than me, and myself were riding in point-to-points, he always had a few horses around, and also bred a few as well. And after that, we did have some runners under rules, so he had a permit to train his own, which means to say he can only train for himself rather than for outside owners.
Okay, so horses have always been a part of your life from childhood?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
And then you rode in point to points and you did a bit of show jumping at university?
The show jump actually probably earlier because it was junior show jumping, which is under 16 on 14-2 ponies, so you know, anything over that's a horse really. I didn't get involved with show jumping on horses because by then the point-to-pointing was taking over really, so we progressed to the point-to-pointing followed by riding under rules, you know.
Okay, then you went to university and you excelled academically, getting an honours degree. Why did you then decide to become a jockey, professional jockey?
I think probably because I very much remember when I was 17 years old, I walked into a racing yard only 5 or 6 miles away from where we train now of Betty Kennard, who was her and Les Kennard were divorced, and I rode a number of horses for her. She only had 16, 18 boxes, and I thought if I walked in there, I thought, fantastic, that's what I'd like to do when I'm one day's train horses, really, more than the riding side. Of course, now we end up with a lot more horses than I ever thought possible, but that's the way it goes.
So you rode 160 winners in your professional jockey career. What would have been your highlights?
Well, there was a race at the time called the Black and White Gold Cup that they had at Ascot, which actually was the fourth most valuable race on the calendar in those days. So we won that on a horse called Artifice for a man called John Thorne. I rode at West Tip in his early days, and then I got jocked off by Richard Dunwoody. My riding won the Midlands Grand National. But, you know, I rode 160 winners in 10 years, and Richard Johnson probably does that in nearly 6 months. So things have changed.
So what was that the reason you decided to hang up your jockey suit and become a trainer?
Yeah, realistically, I mean, the riding was fine, you know, but, you know, it wasn't really going anywhere, so I stopped race riding when I was 30.
Okay, now you started training in 1985 with 6 horses, but I understand you landed running.
Well, yeah, first of all, our first ever runner was a winner at Exeter, a horse called North Yard, and I rode him myself because I kept my riding licence for the first year we were training. And of our first 8 runners, we had 5 winners. And all of a sudden, there's horses coming from every direction, and we were up to sort of 25 horses by the end of the season and went from there, really.
Right, so there was never really any moment when you thought we're not going to make it. You sort of...
No, it progressed very quickly, and we were very fortunate to have... Although they weren't particularly good horses, they were horses we could place to win to start with to get underway.
And your wife, Sarah, was you were already married at that point, and she was a successful horsewoman herself from a racing... Was she from a racing background?
More an eventy background. Her father, Bertie Hill, rode in, won an Olympic gold medal, and Sarah actually rode for the European team in Rome. So she was very much involved with the eventing side.
Okay, now, was there an actual moment when you thought we've made it as a racing stable in that time?
Well, I suppose, you know, thankfully we were lucky to get a good start and things progressed pretty quickly. But, you know, I suppose in 2003 when Rooster Booster won the Champion Hurdle, that we'd had plenty of good winners before, but that was our best at the time. I suppose we'd had Cheltenham Festival winners before then, but at the same time to be winning one of the bigger races, Cheltenham, obviously is very important.
Because looking down through your big winners, I mean, there's all-time favourites for National Hunt fans, Rooster Booster, Flagship Uberales, Menora. I mean, what would have been the absolute highlight so far?
Well, I suppose I go back to Rooster Booster again, really. I mean, when he won the Champion Hurdle, that was, you know, phenomenal, really. Flagship Uberales was a very, very good horse and won the 2 mile champion chase. But, that would still be our best winner, really.
When you're training a horse, and you've had some really good ones, so you know what one is like to train, is there a moment when you realise we've got one here? Would that be at the stable? Would it be after a race? When would they sort of you start to get excited about one?
I think that the horses that have been running on the flat with that race pedigrees are always going to work better at home, particularly bearing in mind that we're doing our work over five furlongs. However, the National Hunt bred horses work very well as well. They're usually the better ones. Not always, it doesn't always work that well. We have what they call the morning glories that are good at home and not so good at the race course. But you do get quite a lot of horses as well that, you know, you were working them mainly over five furlongs, interval training over five furlongs, so three times up that same distance. And, you know, when you're going five furlongs, that's very different from when you're going 2 miles. So actually, the way that we train them, and most National Hunt trainers do nowadays over shorter distances, is a very good way to get them fit without stressing them. But it all isn't a very good way to find out how good they are. So we find out how good they are when they run, really.
Okay, now we've been up on the gallops and they're very spectacular up there just from the scenery point of view, but very stiff as well. What are the facilities you've got here?
The main gallop is a five furlong wood chip. And we put that in 1988, so that's been there for a long time. We've had to change the wood chip regularly. Then in 2003, we put in a three furlong poly trap, mainly for schooling on, but we do a lot of cantering work on that. We have a mile and a half grass gallop as well. Swimming pool, schooling facilities for the horses, both on the all-weather and on grass. So that's the main thing, really.
And what would your maximum number of horses you could handle here?
We have room for 111, so that's our maximum.
And so that must take a lot of staff. How many people work for you?
37. That's what we need to make the operation work. And actually, they're looking after, the main staff are looking after four horses each. But then on top of that, we have our senior staff, which amounts to about 10 people. So Johnson White, our main assistant, Darren O'Dwyer, second assistant. And then we have two head girls that look after the issues with the horses in the yard. Backups to them in the yard, three people travelling horses, one secretary. Jo, our secretary, is amazing because she managed to do everything by herself, and other yards, our places, our sort of size, would have more than one secretary. So that sums it up, really.
And I understand that champion jockey Richard Johnson still comes down to ride out.
Well, he's been our first jockey for the last 20 years, and he lives near Hereford. But he comes down here regularly between October, when we start a lot of schooling, up to about Christmas, through January and February, when we have dark mornings. He's not going to have time to get to the races afterwards, so not so much. And then again in the spring, really. I suppose he comes down something like a dozen times a year.
Okay, and Tom O'Brien actually started here as a stabler, started his career here.
Very much so. So Tom is Aidan O'Brien's nephew, and he rode his first winner here, from here, and he's ridden nearly 1,000 winners now, so he's done very well.
Now, the last time I was here, it doesn't seem like long ago really, but it was about a decade ago, you told me that your assistant trainer, Johnson White, hates going racing. Is that still the case?
Well, it's sort of a semi-right. It's just that realistically, to run everything here, you need somebody here every day rather than somebody who's going racing. So he's in charge of all the staff and organises all that sort of thing. He's quite happy with that rather than going racing a lot as well, I think, anyway. But you'd be surprised if I'm leaving here 10:30 in the morning, say, to go racing, the number of issues and things that have happened between then and when I talk to Johnson White again the next morning. So, you know, we need all that information to make sure that we get everything right.
And do you enjoy race days yourself?
I tend nowadays to go to the bigger meetings and the local meetings. Going a long way for a runner somewhere, say Plumpton or somewhere, is a waste of time, really, you know, and there's always plenty to do here.
Okay, now you've been a very successful yard. Is there anything that you do here that you consider might be unique compared to other yards that sort of contributed to your success?
I don't think so. I mean, I think one of the main things is that your facilities must be good enough to keep horses sound. You know, we all have injuries with horses, but it shouldn't happen at home. So therefore, hopefully we've removed dangers to horses that's going to cause problems. Besides that, it's a matter of having the right horses that are fit and running in the right races.
Now, would betting be a big factor in either your campaigning or personally or as a yard?
Not at all, really. I think when we started training, you know, I did used to bet a bit and I could make it work. But nowadays, I think our horses are usually a shorter price than their chance. And so therefore, on average, you're going to struggle. Very difficult to keep in front of the bookmaker, really. And I hate losing more than I like winning.
Now, you might or may not be surprised to learn. My friend's a bit of a form book beaver. And he tells me that you are 32 from 152 runners in non-handicaps at Newbury. So anyone that had a pound on all of them would be 158 quid up. Is that something that you were conscious of? Is Newbury a favourite track?
No, I didn't realise that. But I suppose, logically, non-handicaps means novices and mainly novice hurdles. So I wouldn't be taking a horse to Newbury to run in a novice hurdle unless he was quite good. Because, you know, realistically, you're better off keeping your horse at a lower level. So that's probably the reason.
Okay, and also your chase runners have taken a dive from 243 in 2015, 165 last year, and 105 so far this year. Are you rebuilding with younger horses?
Probably to an extent, although we've always got more young horses than older horses, due to the fact that as they get older, you know, realistically they might not be good enough and they might be moved on to point to pointing, or they might be too high in the handicap, in which case, you know, they can go hunter chasing or do something else. So I don't think there's been no positive move in that direction. I suppose what also has happened, though, with the new novice chase system, unless your horse is rated over 135, you don't want to run a level weight novice chase because you're not going to be competitive. So you have to start a novice handicap. It's sometimes difficult finding the race for the horse, and therefore you end up having another run or two or several more runs over hurdles rather than going chasing. So, yeah, those are the only reasons I think of, really.
Okay, so how long would you spend personally looking at form and mapping out potential targets for your horses?
A lot of time. I mean, it's massively important that particularly your novices run in the right races. You know, you don't want to be, realistically, you don't want to be winning in a novice hurdle and beating a very decent horse, because otherwise you start with a high handicap mark anyway. So you're always better off starting lower and giving the horse confidence as well at the same time. So I think that's probably one of the main things, you know, is to get horses' confidence to the lowest level first and then build up.
So would you sit down and look maybe three or four runs ahead and target particular race and campaign with that in mind? Did you have to see how each race goes?
With the better horses, definitely. I mean, you know, realistically, the horses that might be Cheltenham bound, you think of Cheltenham and work backwards. But for the majority of horses, you'd be looking at what's suitable for the next month, and then nearer the time, decide which race you run in, depending on the, when I say nearer the time, I mean the day before, because that's when we've got all the information together. So the day before, you know what the ground's going to be, how the horse is, make sure he's okay, obviously, and also, just as importantly, what the opposition is. And we ring around other trainers to find out what's running, and they'll be ringing us. So then you can try and find the race where you've got best chance. I mean, realistically, if you pick up the paper the next morning in your favourite, you're in the right race. But if you're, I always think, if you're eight or 10 to 1 or longer, well, realistically, you don't have much chance, really.
Right, now you've obviously very established here. You've got some long-term loyal owners. Do you also encourage syndicates and sort of group ownership as well?
Oh, very much so. I mean, we do everything, really. You know, we've got one owner that's got sort of a dozen, another one's got 8 or 9. We've got several got 2 or 3. A lot of people own one horse, and then you have a lot of people that have a leg and a horse, a quarter. We do partnerships with 6. We just set up a new partnership, the Sandhill Racing Partnership, where we have 10 people in 2 horses. So everything, yeah, anything that will attract people to have horses training.
Okay, now what would be, I mean, you're a big established guy, but what would be your biggest problem faced by a racehorse trainer?
The biggest one is definitely staff. I mean, it's not so much a problem for us as the industry. Being in the West Country, I think, is a help, and the fact that we have winners, you know, regularly is a help to attract staff. But overall, it is a big problem. I think we're, statistics will show you that we need around 10,000 people working in racing yards in England. We have, I think, just under 9,000 at the moment. But you know, the situation, if anything, is getting worse. Brexit doesn't help, because it hasn't been made obvious to the foreigners that they're welcome into this country if they're working for a living. Also, the pound being so weak hasn't helped, because they're not earning as much money as they were. Anyway, you know, it is a big problem for racing overall, and I think the biggest problem, because without decent staff, then horses can't be trained properly.
So I'm assuming that if there was anything you could change about racing at the moment, is that the what you would change? Is there anything else that would help you?
There's all the minor things, like, of course, we want more prize money, you know, at the end of the day, you know, more prize money helps everybody, but owners don't expect to be making money out of it. Or if they do, they don't get disillusioned. So, you know, that's not the number one. Yeah, sometimes race courses could do a better job looking after their owners, maybe. But this is all minor stuff. I think the major problem we have in racing at the moment is a staffing crisis.
Okay, so finally, you know, obviously you've done very well here, a lot of successes. Are there any burning unfulfilled ambitions that you've still got your eye on?
Well, I suppose having won a champion hurdle, it would be nice to win a Grand National and a Gold Cup. We've had 2 seconds and a third in the Grand National and places in the Gold Cup, so that would obviously be very good. But I don't think that if we don't achieve that I've failed anyway. It's not the end of the world.
Okay, thank you very much, Philip Hobbs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Johnny Ward presents The Front Runner in association with starsports.bet. 18 and over. Be gamble aware.